Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, where we interview business owners, leaders, or marketing professionals to find out their lessons and stories for success.
Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, episode number 91. For those of you who are back for more of our marketing chats with people in the marketing industry and business, you have probably noticed that we are no longer the Paper Planes Marketing Podcast. We're now the CMO Marketing Podcast. There is a whole reason for that. It is an earlier episode. I think it's number 88, episode number 88. If you want to go and listen to that, you will discover why we changed our name and the reasons behind it. It's our second name change of this podcast, our second name change of our business. But go and have a quick listen there and you'll find out why. Today we have on the show a gentleman by the name of Thibaut Clement. He is originally from the Loire Valley in France and now resides in Studio City, LA. He's the CEO of a very, very nice and useful piece of software called Loomly. It is genuinely a great little piece of software. We had a look at it before we did the show, and it's generally something that I think we would potentially be using within our business. So very excited to be talking to him. We are talking to him mainly about social media marketing hacks that can drive conversions. So we're going to talk about how you produce content for your business. We're going to talk about things. We're going to talk about TikTok, and we're going to talk about a lot of other bits and pieces. So very enjoyable, very educational podcast. So I hope you'll enjoy it. Before we jump into it, the usual housekeeping, please rate and review us on iTunes. If you want to get hold of us, please come and find us, cemoh.com. That's spelled C-E-M-O-H. If you want to find out what CMO do, please come and have a look at the website. We are a marketing on demand company. We supply staff, strategists, achievers, and outsourced marketing services. So pretty much everything that you need to grow your business. Come and talk to me, come and talk to my business partner, Matt, and we can help you out. Also, a quick shout out to our audio engineer, Gilberto, who is the podcastboss.com. If you're looking to do any audio work, he's the man that you need to talk to. And come and talk to me. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, not so much Facebook these days, Instagram, anywhere. Or just email me, simon@cemo.com. That's pretty much it. We will jump into the chat with Thibaut Clement from Loomly. Welcome to the show, Thibaut Clement, who is in LA at the moment in Studio City. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Simon, for having me.
Now, you are the CEO of a software company called Loomly, if that is right. And give us a bit of an overview about what Loomly does.
Yeah, you know, Loomly is basically the way we present ourselves usually is that we are a brand success platform, meaning that we help our users and customers actually, you know, collaborate and build a better brand online for their business. And, you know, at the moment, we basically do that for over 5,000 clients around the world.
Cool. Awesome. And before we go any further, you're going to need to explain the Loomly logo to me.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's a fun story. So, you know, I've been working, just so you know, and everyone has the context in mind, I've been working with my spouse, Noemi, for 8 years. And before starting Loomly, we were actually managing an advertising agency, just like you.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
We were operating in France. You know, our biggest client was L'Oreal, and we are also operating here in the US. And you know, we spent a lot of time on social media. We spent a lot of time, you know, creating content for our clients. And you know, as you're probably familiar with this kind of insider joke, you know, you always say that a cat is a social media manager's best friend, because, you know, whenever you put out like a little photo or GIF or a video of a kitten doing whatever, then you will have tons of likes and shares and comments.
Okay.
And so basically, you know, the idea behind our logo, which is basically two social media chat bubbles forming a cat, ahead. He's basically the only, he's kind of your best friend for social media, and is going to help you create better content so that you get more likes and shares and comments, even when you're not publishing kitten pictures.
Right, I get it. Does the cat have a name?
It doesn't. No, you can name it whatever you like. You know, it's more customizable this way.
So talk to me just quickly, because obviously we get a lot of people listening to this who are starting up businesses or who are in startups or whatever. But you went from an advertising agency to building a piece of software. How did that, I mean, and for me, who's done that and is doing that, that seems a completely sensible thing to do. But how did you, you know, what was the moment that you kind of clicked that said, well, this was the way that you wanted to pivot, that you wanted to change the business? What sort of caused that change?
So it almost happened the other way around. So we had, you know, this advertising agency, both in France and here in the US, and we were serving a pretty wide array of customers, you know, big and small. Like I said, our biggest customer was L'Oreal, and we were managing five brands for them. So you can imagine this is, you know, kind of the high end of the spectrum. We were also working with more, you know, like smaller businesses and basically, you know, everyone in between, you know, like fast growing startups looking for more growth. And there was one thing that was common to all of those clients. It was the process that we had to plan, prepare, and send them, you know, content suggestions for, you know, the weeks and months to come. And so that's probably something that you are familiar with and something that in the business we tend to call creating and managing an editorial calendar. Yeah. And all of that, you know, was happening within Excel or spreadsheet. And as you may know, you know, Excel is terrific when you have to play with numbers.
Yeah.
It was not really meant to include a lot of text, some, you know, creative assets, or to collaborate with people going back and forth and getting some approval. Yeah. So that, you know, meant that the process was repetitive, time-consuming, error-prone. And so we tried to find something different to basically streamline the process. And we could, you know, all we could find online from existing tools were basically two families of tools. One was, you know, I would say generic project management software that were great for collaboration, but were not meant for the actual content publishing process. You know, what you and I are probably very familiar with, you know, from ID generation, you know, to content creation, mockup generation, and then some kind of approval process, and then distribution of the content.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was this first family of tools, generic project management software. There was another family of tools, which were a bit, you know, a bit better in the sense that, you know, they were allowing us to distribute the content. So we could call them social media schedulers, you know, Hootsuite and Buffer and Cloud Social, that are all, you know, very, you know, great software. And basically they were terrific at scheduling and distributing existing content. But they were not, they were kind of falling short on the aspect of creating the content before that, you know, up front in the funnel and enabling the collaboration. So because we couldn't find anything, we said, okay, we'll just build it for ourselves. It was just an internal tool. I'm not even a software engineer. I just learned everything on my own. And that was back in 2015. I started, you know, kind of programming by night and kind of consulting by day in the agency. And by the end of the year, we had a prototype up and running, and we started using it with our clients. We did not tell them it was our own product because we wanted some honest feedback and not just, you know, a little pat in the back. And they actually loved it. One of our clients even told us he would fire us as an agency if he had to go back to using Excel after trying the platform. So that would be probably, you know, kind of the aha moment that you were referring to.
Right.
And so we decided that, you know, maybe some other people could enjoy that. And so we opened up the platform in public beta and we received a lot of terrific feedback and, you know, one thing led to another. And at some point, you know, things kind of got out of control in the right sense. And that's when we kind of decided not really to pivot from the agency to the startup, but more, the startup was just taking all of our time. And so we decided it was just more you know, kind of the right thing to do to kind of put the agency side on hold.
So I'm gonna go ask a completely selfish question here. When you were building this in house, mm-hmm. and it's not actually that selfish question, because I met somebody the other day who ran a restaurant, and she was building a piece of software for her to use internally. Mm-hmm. And you know, as she was building it, she thought, well, other restaurants will be able to use this as well. Yep. And I guess there's a lot of people that have that thought. They can see that there's a gap for something that they, you know, in their business that, you know, they could possibly build. Did you, when you built that software, were you building it yourself? I mean, did you employ software developers? Did you outsource that? Was there another agency building it for you? How did you approach that?
I had some basic, programming, you know, familiarity. I had been toying around with HTML and CSS and JavaScript for quite a while. And I had also been playing, you know, on my free time, even before I had started this project, with Ruby on Rails, which is a terrific framework to build CRUD application, you know. And so basically, you know, that's what I started using to kind of, just build a prototype. And so it was very funny because, I was basically, kind of putting this piece of prototype together, and then, I was showing it to my spouse, Noemi, who was also my business partner in the agency, and she was basically the first user. So it was terrific because I was building it, she was giving me the feedback, and so we had this kind of, instant feedback loop that helped us, get to this first stage of the prototype, and then we started growing a little bit, and so we were able to hire, I would say, a talented engineer who knew better than I, and that's how, you know, it kind of got started.
Right. Okay. I'm going to ask you, obviously, you know, some questions about social media, because you're obviously on that, you know, given what you're doing, given the what Loomly does, you're on the, you know, the forefront of it. I guess the first thing I was going to ask you is, a lot of businesses in our target demographic, so small to medium sized enterprises, they still in 2020, after Facebook has been around for 10 plus years, they still find it hard to produce content, to consistently produce content. Is there a discipline behind it? Is there a trick to, you know, creating some sort of focus that you can make sure that you're actually, you know, consistently producing content for these social platforms?
I don't know if it's a trick, but I think, you know, what we've seen, you know, working consistently, initially when Noemi and I built our first e-commerce business, which was selling candy over a subscription model, and then later on, as we were operating an advertising agency, and now that we are basically, you know, serving, like I said, over 5,000 marketing teams and small businesses around the world, there is one thing that, you know, always pops up. One thing that everyone is consistently getting back to when they are being successful, and that is basically implementing, you know, a process. And that process is actually, you know, very, very simple. It's all about, you know, having some publishing guidelines, which is basically, you know, how often you want to publish, on which platforms, what kind of content, the kind of topics that you want to cover, those that you want to leave out, and these kind of things. And then, you know, having some sort of editorial planning, meaning that you are going to lay out ahead of time the content that you're going to publish in the next few days, weeks, or months. Prepare that content, you know, in batch, because that's when you are the most effective. And then, you know, either schedule it ahead of time to be published automatically, or, you know, to kind of set some reminders for you to basically publish it on time manually at the right moment. And when I say, you know, publish automatically, I really don't mean automation, like, you know, some kind of tool that would, you know, automatically kind of, you know, take some content from somewhere and publish it automatically for you on your account. I'm really talking about, you know, creating some authentic, original, and sincere content, you know, something that makes sense for your brand and tells your brand story. And then, you know, of course, just preparing it ahead of time and kind of setting it to be published down the line. But I would say that having this kind of process or workflow where you prepare everything ahead of time and you kind of get the big picture and you have a vision of the story that you want to tell over the next few weeks or months, and you prepare the content once, this is probably the most effective strategy to consistently being able to publish on social media and to publish great content.
You mentioned a couple of words there, authentic and original, which is obviously at the heart of, you know, all social media, not just social media content, any content. I find companies, especially the smaller they get, actually that's not true. It's not down to size. It's down to attitude. I find them struggle to understand what authentic content is. Give me what you would, how you would explain to a customer what authentic content is.
Well, the first thing is, you know, it's probably that you should probably try to, you can look at what your competitors are doing or your peers, but basically, you know, kind of taking what they do and just repurposing it with your own flavor is probably not the best definition of authentic that we could get at. Yeah. But you know, authentic is about, I think it all goes back to what I was saying. It's before content comes the story. What's your story? You know, where do you come from as a business owner or as a founder? Why did you start your business? What makes it different? You know, do you have specific values or specific process or, you know, specific partners or, you know, a specific way to hire your team, this kind of thing. So what is really unique about yourself that by definition is not getting something unique about other people. And so when you start from there, you can basically, you know, kind of, you know, craft your brand story and say, okay, so this is what is unique about us. This is, you know, who we are serving, like who our target audience is. And so we are going to basically present every single piece of content, every single interaction that we have with them through the lens of that uniqueness. And so that's basically, you know, how you basically build an authentic brand story. I mean, you know, at Loomly, we are a startup, but basically, you know, you already know that, you know, I'm French, or, well, you know, I don't know if the audience knows, but I'm French, I work with my spouse. And it's true that, you know, many things that we do in the company, even if it's not for communication, it's just for the way that we manage the company, is kind of influenced by, you know, our culture and the fact that we are basically a mom and pop startup. And that is a unique value proposition compared to some of our biggest competitors who are 10 or 100x bigger than we are, because it allows us, you know, to kind of let all of that, you know, attention to detail and passion and love basically transpire in everything we do.
There's an element where I always think that, you know, to be producing good content, you need to be relatively creative. I think people that are running businesses sometimes might be creative, but they might not have the time to be creative, or you know, all those kind of challenges that, you know, people have thrown at them. Is there a way that you can maybe, you know, trigger that creative elements? I mean, you talk about telling your story. We had podcast on a couple of weeks ago where with a lady called Mandy, who's done a lot of brand work. She always talks about getting the, you know, brand values right for you know, your business and all those kind of things. Do you think this is something that people should potentially outsource from a creative perspective? Or, you know, if they're struggling with time, do you think they should be going to ask other people for help? Or do you think it's going to be more authentic if they're doing it themselves?
Okay, so I think, you know, I need to kind of break it down into probably, you know, several talking points, if you don't mind.
Go for it, yeah.
So if I will probably start by, you know, with the end of your question, basically, should you outsource, or, you know, can you be authentic when you outsource? I think you can be authentic when you outsource, because, and I'm really trying to stay clear of any kind of promotion of Loomly, but
this is that's fine.
The reason why we built it.
Right.
Because there is one thing that we are convinced, Noemi and I, is that, you know, maybe, you know, some people are better at creating nice visuals than you are. maybe some people are more comfortable with, you know, words than you are. And so they are better at crafting copy. But one thing is for sure, no one knows your brand better than you do. And right. So we think that in the end, even if you do not create the content, what you should be doing for sure is approve the content, making sure it's aligned with, you know, your brand values, you know, your brand story, what you want to say, your brand messaging. And so, you know, if you do that, then I would say it's okay to work with, you know, with an outsourced team who is going to probably, you know, be more efficient at actually creating the content. But what you are kind of, you know, the guarantor of, as the brand owner is that anything that goes out is on brand. And so that is the most important part. So I would say that's one. Two, going back to kind of the first part of your question now, which was about, you know, creativity. I think that in the past 10 years that I have been working, I would say in the social media and digital marketing sphere and advertising sphere, every single time I have seen consistency beat creativity.
Right.
That's for sure.
Okay.
Because this is a long-term goal. Maybe, you know, if you are super creative and super lucky, maybe once you will have, you know, like a post go viral. That's possible, you know, and then the next day you're just falling off everyone's radar. However, if you are here day in, day out, building your brand, telling your brand story, pushing out, you know, some authentic content, then you are going to build an audience over time. And this is going to make you successful much more than being, you know, a creative genius once in your while. So that would be the second part of my answer. And the third part, I'm sorry, it's a very long answer.
No. That would look. It's a great answer. So keep going.
Okay, cool. And the last part, I think it was, you know, a great question, which was about, you know, how can you spark, you know, this creativity if you don't feel like you are the creative type. Although, and that's just a parenthesis, I think that creativity is more like a muscle than a gift. It's something that you can train, and the more you use it, the better you are at it. End of my parenthesis. And so basically, you know, there are indeed tricks for that matter that you can use to basically spark your creativity. You know, and so that's another thing that we do at Loomly, but again, it's something that you can do without Loomly, absolutely. So in Loomly, we give you some post ideas. And those are based on, you know, trending topics on Twitter so that you can have some ideas of what the conversation out there is. And you can kind of, you know, harness the conversation to basically, you know, talk about your brand. So that's one. Two, you can subscribe to many, you know, RSS feeds of, you know, things that basically talk about topics that, you know, are related to your brand so that you also know what is going on in your industry or, you know, your geographic area. And you are able to basically also have a sense of what the conversation should be these days. And this gives you some ideas of what to post about. And other things that you can leverage are, you know, some kind of, I would say date-related events, like, you know, Earth Day or International Cat Day or this kind of thing, where you can, you know, kind of anchor your own, you know, communication into the current context. So that it's not about, you know, just saying, hey, it's Earth Day, happy Earth Day, everyone. It's more like, you know, hey, today it's Earth Day, and, you know, here is what we are doing in our company to kind of celebrate that. Yeah. And this helps you to kind of position yourself in the actual life of your audience.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's one of the things I often, when we create content plans for customers, there's some great websites out there with, you know, what are, you know, stupid or strange, weird holidays that you can be celebrated throughout the world. Like, you know, there's a World Pizza Day and, you know, and all those kind of things. And not only are there international ones, there's national ones as well. And you know, there's massive databases of these. And all of a sudden you can create really good, fun content by, you know, playing around with those things. And then I always say, you know, in Australia, there's and obviously in the US as well, in France, there's standard holidays that happen every time, every year, you know, like Mother's Day and Father's Day and Easter and Christmas and Valentine's Day and all those kind of things. So, you've got content that you can produce, not just for online, but, you know, within your business around those events. And if you can't find content, you know, for 12 months of the year, then, you know, I would often argue you're not looking hard enough.
Yeah, it's correct that, you know, there are many like sources of ideas that you can leverage to, again, you know, kind of shed a light on something that you may not be thinking about yourself, but then you can look at it and you say, oh yeah, this is interesting for us because so and so. And so that's exactly the, you know, part of the process that what I was referring to a bit earlier, where you want to basically, you know, decide, you know, how often you want to publish. So, you know, maybe twice a week, something like that. And then, you know, when you look at the upcoming months, it's pretty easy to say, okay, twice a week, there are 4 weeks, you know, coming up, it's 8 posts. So I'll think about, you know, what's happening in my business and I will start with that. Then I will look into, you know, a couple of things that are trending on social media and or some of those international days, and that, you know, will kind of basically fill my plan for the next few weeks. And so that's basically how you can kind of break down this process or kind of, you know, work around the writer's block, because you are like, okay, I'll just break this down into some very simple and actionable steps. And I think that, you know, it's like you say, you find there are many ways to find inspiration around the web.
I want to finish up today just talking about a couple of the channels, because I would imagine that somewhere you may have some opinions on, you know, what channels people should be focusing on. And normally I would say, and I suspect you would agree, that the channel depends on your target market and what you're trying to achieve, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Is that, would that be true for what you believe?
You know, I think that in an ideal world, what you want to do is kind of, you know, you want to find yourself in a platform that is at the intersection of A, where your audience is, and B, where your competitors aren't. So that you know, that is the perfect world. No, that's easier said than done. And so, of course, you know, the priority is to be where your audience is. Now, you know, it's very interesting to see these days that more and more of the social platforms that we all know and love are kind of, you know, growing exponentially. You know, although there are kind of, you know, the usual suspects, it's true that in particular, there are three that we, on which we see some, you know, increasing opportunities, to build a brand and do some fantastic things. One, of course, you know, let's just get it out of the way. Of course, it's TikTok. It's so massive and beyond the, you know, the app and the social network itself. I think that, you know, everything that is being built around it is kind of, disruptive and pretty impressive. You know, the tech, the business strategy, so many things. So I think, you know, TikTok, it's skyrocketing for a reason. And so it's, if you are, you know, mostly in a B2C, setting and you are targeting mostly a younger audience, then, you know, of course it's a no-brainer.
It's an insane platform at the moment. It's such a time sink. You can start, you can watch it for like, turn it on for 2 minutes, and then the next thing you know, 20 minutes has passed.
Exactly.
I guess just to sort of go off on a tangent there, you know, Facebook and Instagram are looking at, you know, building a competitor. YouTube's going to be building a competitor. Do you think they're too late? Do you think TikTok is just got that market now, that it's going to be too hard to knock it off the perch?
You know, I don't know. You know, that's we've seen things happen in one way and the other way in the past. You know, the Snapchat Instagram war has been interesting in that regard. You know, so I don't know. I think that, you know, it's interesting to see how each platform is going to evolve. I think that, you know, what's interesting about Facebook and Instagram is that they have built this kind of moat with their network effect and the fact that, you know, you and probably everyone else has already tons of friends on Facebook and Instagram. So it kind of makes you coming back. So that's interesting. What is happening with TikTok is that you can just, you know, open up the app. You don't even need to sign in or sign up and you will start seeing content, and you don't even need to have friends over there. So that's where, you know, it's interesting. And the question is going to be, you know, how these two models are going to evolve in the future. You know, it's possible that at some point, you know, with TikTok, people will at some point need some more connections, and we don't know. But maybe it's also possible that this is, you know, the future and how platforms are going to be built, because this kind of, you know, lowers the barriers to entry for usage and adoption. So, you know, I don't know yet. What I think is that those are two big and impressive companies, Facebook on one hand and TikTok on the other hand, and that they have, you know, they have found a way to, you know, entertain and attract and retain so many people that, you know, we can probably trust them to keep doing so.
I was just going to say there was an announcement, I think, came out today, actually, that TikTok's put aside $200 million to fund people to create content, which I think it's fantastic, but it's also completely insane.
Well, you know, it's actually super interesting that you mentioned that, because do you know who also think that TikTok is a big competitor for them? It's Netflix.
Really?
And okay. Yes. Yeah. And for the first time in their kind of corporate, you know, I would say documents, they are kind of referring to TikTok as a competitor for them. While they never in the past mentioned other social networks, and they never even mentioned Quibi, which would be a direct competitor.
Right, I downloaded Quibi and I still don't understand it. I think that was that was a product built by a committee. You know, that was anyway. It's interesting you say that about Netflix, because I sit there and go, if there was a TikTok app on my smart TV or my Apple TV, the opportunity to sit and turn it on and then again be 20 minutes, 30 minutes into it, you know, watching TikToks, that's an attractive proposition. And that's an attractive proposition for people who want to advertise as well.
Correct. And one of the things that kind of, you know, Netflix noted is that, you know, one of the challenges that basically all networks or, you know, TV channels or studios or streaming platforms are running into these days because of the pandemic is content creation. TikTok doesn't have that problem because basically everyone can create content from their phone. They have developed the perfect app to, you know, create some nice videos and also, you know, edit them and enhance them. And so that's why it's super interesting, you know, that they are now putting aside $200 million to help creators, because that's basically, you know, they understand that, you know, content is king, content has always been king, and content will probably always be king.
So aside from TikTok, because we're running out of time a little bit, what's your other sort of favorite platform? What else do you think has still got, you know, growth opportunities and audience opportunities?
So yeah, TikTok, of course, is you know, one of the most obvious ones. YouTube is pretty impressive these days. And the reason why we're impressed with YouTube is because we are seeing audience growth that we haven't seen for a while on other platforms. If you look at, you know, a couple of influencers that you appreciate, you will see that maybe it took them quite a while to go from 0 to 1 million followers. Yeah. But then you will see how fast they go from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6. And that is, you know, extremely interesting, because it shows, you know, kind of the room that there is here for opportunity. For instance, I love, you know, looking at you know, food videos and cooking videos. And many of the creators that I'm following now, when I started following them, they had like a couple of, you know, thousands or maybe tens of thousands of followers, and now they are in the millions. And it seemed that, you know, there has been like a huge acceleration of the, you know, the growth of their audience. And so I think that, you know, YouTube is really, I wouldn't say underrated, but I think it's usually underappreciated for brands and creators because there is a lot of things to do on YouTube. So that would be two. And the third one, I believe is LinkedIn. Because, you know, it's B2B, but there is a lot, you know, to do over there. There is the algorithm is still pretty favorable, especially for personal profiles. And so there are great things that you can do in terms of storytelling, in terms of, you know, telling the story of your brand or your business, but through, I would say, your own eyes. And that is interesting from a branding perspective because, you know, it kind of brings a new take on whatever you're doing, a more human touch.
Yeah. I'm going to throw one at you because I only started looking at it probably, a couple of weeks ago, but, Twitch, have you experienced much of Twitch?
So personally, I haven't that much, but what I find, you know, really interesting with Twitch is that, you know, it started mainly, you know, with the gaming community, and it's still, of course, big over there. But what I find interesting now is that, you know, because of the current context and the pandemic, we are seeing more and more, industries and verticals, kind of moving onto the platform to try and find new revenue streams and to basically reposition themselves. And I think that, you know, one of the best example is probably DJs, who can't go to any venues and events and festivals and clubs. And, you know, but they love, you know, playing sets. And so they can basically, you know, keep sharing their music, keep sharing their new productions, keep showcasing their talent and, you know, having their following, you know, kind of follow them and sometimes tip them as well.
Okay. My last question for you today, you've obviously got 5,000 customers using your platform. Who out of those 5,000, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Who out of those 5,000 do you think is killing it? Who's doing a best content job? And it doesn't have to be someone on your platform, but you know, who would you be looking at and saying, you know, those guys are smashing it in the marketplace?
Well, that's where it's actually super interesting. I would rather, you know, keep things rather anonymous and confidential for privacy purposes, of course, but you know, most of the time I'm happy to speak with our customers and help them myself. So I see what they're doing. And it's true that most of the time I'm blown away by nonprofit organizations and charities. And for one simple reason, they are the ones who tend to be the most authentic, the most genuine content, you know, showing real pictures of real human things that are not necessarily photoshopped. And you should see the engagement on this kind of post because basically, you know, when you see this post, you just want to react. You just want to respond and engage. And I think this is terrific. And that's one of the things that I love the most about what we do is that, you know, we also humbly contribute to helping good causes.
Cool. Look, thank you very much for your time today, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
I hope things work out. I hope things work out over there in LA and the rest of America with the pandemic as well. You know, hoping it all comes back to normal relatively quickly. But really appreciate your time on the show. If anybody wants to check it out, it's Loomly, loomly.com. Where are they best to find you as well, Thibaut? Where can they track you down if they've got a question for you?
You know, you can find me on LinkedIn, type in my name, or you can find me on Twitter as well. And my email is not that hard to find. It's just my first name at loomly.com. So, you know, and I respond to every single email.
And I suppose we better make sure everyone knows how to spell your first name. Whilst it's pronounced Thibaut, it's Thibaud. For those of the uncultured out there who don't understand these beautiful French names, that's how you spell it.
Thank you very much, Simon. It was a pleasure being with you today.
Thank you very much, mate. Cheers. That's it for episode number 90. Well, I forgot what episode it was. Number 90. dear, I thought this through. Good research, Simon. Episode number 91. Hope you enjoyed the chat with Thibaut Clement. Get a chance to look up loomly.com. Otherwise, we will catch you next time. Thanks very much.